This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Brent DeHart. Thanks for joining us for your noon hour of local talk issues. Here on Newsmakers, we talk about things that are critical to the Salem-Kaiser area. Today, we have a great guest, my friend Jim Lewis, a city councilor from Ward 8 for the city of Salem. He's going to talk about all things city council related, especially as it relates to West Salem and moving forward. We'll touch a little bit on the budget. We'll touch a little bit on transportation. We'll touch a little bit on public safety. It'll be great. Today, we've got Hunter filling in for Dave, and he's ready at the helm since, in case I make horrible mistakes or say something incredibly stupid, more stupid than usual. Anyway, thanks for being here. It's great to have you. It's great to keep you informed on things that you should know in Marion and Polk County. Jim Lewis, welcome to the studio.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's always fun to have you. Jim, so you can picture this because Jim's retired. And he was, I always saw Jim, this, you know, business clothes, and he was working in real estate world. He was working in title and with realtors and always looked very sharp. And now he's this retired guy who's volunteering his time with the city council, and he looks laid back and like he's visited the sunshine.
Hey. When you're retired, you get to wear what you want, especially on radio.
There you go. No, I'm just jealous. I'm wearing this starched button-up shirt and thinking I am doing life wrong right now. All right. So, Jim, number one on our topic of conversation today, because you do represent the vast majority of West Salem, right?
Yep.
So Ward 8, we can't just say right. Ward 8. We got all of your ward is in West Salem, correct?
All of Ward 8 is in West Salem. Part of West Salem, that commercial area right over the bridge, is now Ward 1.
Ward 1, Kaiser's ward.
Correct.
Okay. So, well, let's kick right off because you were part of the congestion task force.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was convened even before they shot down any possibility of another river crossing.
Correct.
To try to look at alternatives that may cost more or less money to ease congestion that already exists.
Right.
All right, so, and I noticed that you cooperatively and like a gentleman worked with Kara Kaser and convened meetings and got some public feedback. Let's talk a little bit about the congestion task force, especially how it relates to Marine Drive.
Marine Drive was one of the 16 recommendations that came out of the congestion relief task force. It really has been listed, although we didn't prioritize those 16 recommendations on the congestion relief task force, but Marine Drive seems to have surfaced to the top, and it makes sense. Of all of the projects that the congestion relief task force lists, Marine Drive is truly the most crucial for West Salem especially.
All right, so this is a north-south route. It's between right. the river and Wallace Road.
Well, right now, the part of Marine Drive that is in the transportation plan that has been there since 1997 starts at Glen Creek and goes north to...
past where the bridge should be?
Past the bridge, yeah.
Past where the bridge should be. Okay. Glen Creek, so that's the corner there. That's where Roths is.
River Bend is the north side.
And, okay, near the West Salem Library and all that. Mm-hmm. So going that's already in the transportation plan.
Correct.
But not funded, or is it in our program?
It's funny, there's still remaining from the Streets and Bridges bond measure that passed in 2008, about $3.6 million to go towards the Marine Drive project.
Wow.
It's funny, Marine Drive, as I mentioned, was in the transportation plan in 1997. That's before, believe it or not, we actually started talking about the Salem River crossing. The need and the layout for Marine Drive has been there. What stalled it, I think, a little bit is when we started talking about the Salem River crossing and its connection to Marine Drive, there was a hesitation to do anything about Marine Drive until we figured out where and if the bridge was going to happen. Okay. Now that we know the bridge is not going to happen, Marine Drive goes back to the original idea of being an alternate for Wallace Road to help relieve the congestion on Wallace Road, as well as serving those neighborhoods between Wallace Road and the river.
Yeah, because Wallace Road, I mean, face it, West Salem is an odd duck in terms of you've got one street going on Edgewater and one street in Wallace, right. And you don't get anywhere without those two streets.
No.
The other thing I would like to see, by the way, counselor, the other thing I think would be smart is to have some commercial development other than those two streets and get them up in the neighborhoods so that people don't have to come down off the hills and clog the already congested. Is there going to be land use changes having to do with that?
You know, I keep waiting for it. I've lived in the same house for 19 years now, 19 years this month. And up until just recently, there has only been one place in Ward 8. To sit down and have a cup of coffee. There was no place to have dinner. Now with the barbecue place just off Wallace, there is now a place to sit down and have dinner, one place. Yes, West Salem needs commercialization, and it needs it desperately. The problem is we still run into folks that insist that that's not the purpose of West Salem. West Salem is for residential dwellers, and that everything that is needed can be reached across the bridge.
So you have a population about the size of Polk. Actually, you take all of the rest of Polk County. We're talking about, 35,000 people in West Salem and its surroundings?
Yeah, I would say in the surroundings. In the city limits, there's probably 22,000 people. In the surrounding area, 35,000 easy.
All right, so there's some money. Let's go back to Marine Drive. People have visualized this. It'll go south of Glen Creek and connect by the park and circulate in back towards the area where Wallace meets Edgewater, right?
I believe ultimately, and the only question is really how much time it will take, because it makes too much sense to have Marine Drive continue south and near the bridgeheads. There's a underpass that has been planned on Second Street. Mm-hmm. That will connect both sides of West Salem. It's funny, West Salem is split east and west by Wallace Road, and that connection, that underpass, would connect all of West Salem east and west, and it ultimately will be the best idea. Theoretically, if there's another connection to the bridge, that would work well for it. But right now, the main need is that is Marine Drive from Glen Creek North, so we can at least have another option for folks that want to go north and south.
Other than the money that's left over from the bond measure in 2008, how much more money do you need, and what will be the sources?
You know, right now I couldn't say for sure. I think once plans come out, specific plans, once the city starts investing its money, then I think it's going to make more sense for us to go to places like ODOT or the Federal Highway to see what money may be available. In conjunction with Marine Drive, there is going to be a separated bicycle and pedestrian path, and that sometimes helps plans get done when it comes to funding from the governments.
Is this likely to happen before we see another Streets and Bridges bond measure in the next few years? Or is that going to be part of that package?
I think there's a determination on the part of the city council to utilize those bond funds in the best way that we can, as soon as we can. That $3.6 million certainly could not buy as much today as it could have bought in 2010. Mm-hmm. And so I think the goal is to find ways to spend that money appropriately to really get us started on that main infrastructure project.
All right, I want to go into a little bit more on the Congestion Relief Task Force, especially since I got text from my wife who got to work about 45 minutes late today due to some traffic issues and congestion, for which we have no relief and no options. So I'm going to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break and come back about other items on the Congestion Relief Task Force that Jim thinks is a good idea.
Yeah.
This is Brent DeHart. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Thank you, Hunter, and thank you, Green Acres Landscape. This is Brent DeHart on Newsmakers, and Hunter's filling in for Dave today. In the studio with us is Jim Lewis. City Councilor Ward 8. He was elected in May of 2014, and to our good fortune, he was reelected last May in 2018 for another 4-year term. So first of all, I got to say thanks for being there.
Yep.
Thanks for being one of the sensible ones.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We don't want the entire council to go all sideways on us. We were talking a little bit. I think we share a viewpoint that the city councilors should do. And we had Brad Danke on last week. We had Councilor Danke. That we should focus on city issues.
Correct.
That we should focus on city issues and kind of leave national issues to national bodies. Because it's kind of pragmatic. How have you found being a counselor? I mean, Councilor Nanke described most of what we do is boring. Most of it is pragmatic and perfunctory in terms of making the city work, right?
Sometimes I get the adage of the medical folks, the goal is to do no harm. And that in itself is hard work.
All right. So the Congestion Relief Task Force meant to mitigate somewhat our lack of another bridge crossing. What else is on the list of recommendations that you think might be implemented in a short term and that you think will actually be helpful?
You know, the ones that stand out, and especially from a West Salem standpoint, is what could happen to Wallace Road. There are talks about right-in and right-out only. There are talks about minimizing the exits off of Wallace Road. Mm-hmm. And these are all things from a congestion standpoint, from a traffic standpoint, do make sense. The only issue there is the only business district that we have, really. There's two business districts. One is at the very southern tip of West Salem, east of Wallace Road, and the other is the Edgewater area. Mm-hmm. And when you start limiting turns off of Wallace, you start limiting the potential of business being successful. And so that's going to have to be something that has a lot of conversation and engagement of the business community in West Salem as well as city staff.
Okay. So what about there's also recommendations across the river as well, right?
The one that I think it would be the simplest to implement is at Court Street and Front Street, there are at both the north and the south end of Court Street, there are crosswalks. And so a pedestrian now can walk across Front Street on the north or the south side of Court Street. There's a suggestion about eliminating the south crosswalk and having just the north. And that would help, I think, a little bit. It would certainly bring the pedestrians to one point rather than two. And it could be easily done by simply taking away the crosswalk sign and painting some stripes on the street.
All right. Okay, I'm not overly optimistic, but I appreciate incremental changes. There's always tweaks that can be done, especially as populations shift and more people are living downtown and traffic patterns shift and so forth. So the tweaks are great. It just doesn't really substitute for planning for the next generation.
No, and I personally believe that is why Marine Drive is the crucial aspect of the Congestion Relief Task Force. It would truly bring the most relief where it's needed. And it's going to cost some money. Right now, for anybody who lives in West Salem, they recognize the congestion. My wife works for the state of Oregon. 7-minute trip to our house. It took her an hour and 12 minutes the other night. And I'm still waiting for somebody to convince me that that automobile running for an hour and a half produces less gas, greenhouse gas, than if that engine's running for 7 minutes.
Well, that's just crazy talk, Councilor Jim Lewis. What?
Yeah.
Our carbon footprint increases when there's gridlock? Boy, somebody should talk to the advocates that have gotten a hold of some voters in city council.
Yeah, I just...
That's crazy. It
defies common sense.
How much is that in distance? Normally 7 minutes, you said.
Yeah, it's probably about 4.5 miles.
Well, clearly she should have been jogging or with her groceries and with her shopping and with her, she just walked up the hill, right?
And you know what? She may have done that if she could find a parking place.
All right, enough on that. We rant about this all the time. Let's shift, if you don't mind, a little bit. Let's talk about fire protection. Let's talk about emergency services in West Salem.
Okay.
Of course, you have a new station in the southern part of West Salem and in the northern part of West Salem, and that wasn't staffed for it was originally staffed after the fire bond measure in 2008 passed, and it got built, and then it got scaled back.
Yes.
So do you think that the calls now warrant two full-time stations fully staffed?
Oh, absolutely, in the city. I think the fact that we now have two fire stations in West Salem certainly allows some more protection for the West Salem residents, but I think, in fact, it does also support the emergency needs in all of Salem. And so I think the fire chief has done an excellent job of positioning the station, so the city is covered at the very, very best. Could we use more fire stations? Sure. Could we use more firemen? You bet. Do we have the finances to do that? No. Hmm. The opening of the fire station in West Salem certainly was a great thing for the West Salem residents, but I think it also has benefits for the entire city.
Yeah, so if you don't know, a lot of times if there's a lot of calls coming out of Station X, some people will rotate. They'll rotate equipment and personnel to fill in so that there's coverage. If there's three calls coming out of one area, then you can take something out of West Salem and say bring it downtown or bring it to the South Salem and those kinds of things. So they can rotate their resources to at least a certain degree.
Right. And it's a methodical plan that the fire chief works out with the folks. And the coverage, I think, is it's certainly less than what the fire folks would like to provide. But I do believe it's at a level that's keeping Salem safe.
Less than West Salem, even?
Yeah.
Really? All right. So, folks, going back in history about 10, 11 years when we were planning this bond measure to build these stations, my perspective at the time was that we were building a station ahead of its time, mm-hmm. that the call numbers, and again, this goes back to data, folks, and what does the data show? How many phone calls were coming in for how many more emergency situations, both medical and, of course, occasionally fire? It just didn't warrant a second full-time station. However, political reality, folks, was we needed a lot of West Salem votes to pass this thing, and West Salem wanted infrastructure to be built then for the now and future demand. I get that. I mean, that's what we're saying about building transportation infrastructure for not just now, but for the next 10, 20, 30 years. So, but at the time, the call volume just wasn't there, Councilor
right.
Lewis.
Right.
And I think they overstaffed it when they first opened and did so for a little bit of political reasons. And unfortunately, did have to scale back due to budget cuts during the recession.
Right.
But now we're in both. It's fully staffed, it's 24 hours, mm-hmm. and the call volume warrants it.
Right. And quite frankly, the budget is an issue, and as it's well known, we are running a deficit. It's not that we don't have a balanced budget, we do, but we are biting into what I call our savings more and more each year, and if you continue to bite into your savings, all of a sudden your savings is gone.
You know, it's interesting because we have in these last 2 weeks, two of the more pragmatic, I will say, councilors here. And folks, I think if you've listened to Newsmakers a long time, you've heard that we tend to be somewhat fiscally conservative, but these counselors are pretty practical guys, and they're both saying, we're spending down our checking account balance, and that's how we're making it happen, but something's going to have to change, hence the revenue task force.
Correct. And the city will be looking at those options shortly, and we'll be asking the voters. To support, I'm sure, which I got to be honest, Salem has always been very generous when it comes to supporting the needs of the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good record both in terms of getting things passed, if they're prudent about it, mm-hmm. and getting things passed again, if they were prudent with the money the first time.
Right.
All right, so the budget, they have a public hearing, right? So
yes.
There's one last public hearing if anybody wants to weigh in.
Correct, and it's Monday, this coming Monday, June 10th. It's City Hall. It's going to be a busy, busy meeting. I think there are three public hearings, and one of them is on the budget. So that will give folks an additional time to come and testify about what their desires, their goals, their needs are. You know, it's a tough job. It's impossible to provide everything that everybody wants, and it's a matter of priorities. Mm-hmm. And it is really no different than what it should be at people's homes. You know, whether you write it down on a piece of paper or whether you just live by it, most people have a budget and they have to live within it, and the city's no different.
Yeah. All right, so the public hearing, are you expecting any big surprises, any changes now that you're basically at the tail end of the budget process? If you're not familiar, folks, they have to pass a budget by the end of this month for a fiscal year that starts July 1st.
There are going to be discussions based on what happened at the budget committee meetings. There are going to be some discussions and possibly some recommendations to add back some of the positions that the city manager's budget is calling to be removed. And then the only additional thing really that I can think of is that there will be a discussion about funding a climate action plan. And that is something that did not pass at the budget committee level. But as a practical matter, the counselors who now make the final decision, there was some favor with that group.
We're talking to Councilor Jim Lewis of West Salem, Ward 8, Climate Action Plan. Is this a guiding document like a transportation plan? What is that?
You know, I'm not familiar enough to be able to talk about it. I know that the cities like Portland, a number of cities have them. Whether they are actually being used as tools that are showing some effect in the goal of what they're there for, I don't know that yet. You know, for me, if it's a demand from the city as a whole, then I'm not going to stand in the way from it. But I have to look at it from a priority standpoint, and infrastructure and public safety, safe walks to school, those are issues that are more important to me because I believe it's something that we can affect. And the Climate Action Plan is one of those things that is more of a feel-good. You know, I got to be honest, over the last 6 months, I've had multiple people testify in front of the city council that we have 12 years, and if we don't dramatically reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, I mean by 50% or more, if we don't do that in the next 12 years, we will have gone past the point of return. If that's true, it's not a Salem, Oregon issue, it's a planetary issue. And when I look at it from a common sense standpoint, the idea of accomplishing this on a worldwide basis in the next 12 years is not likely.
But so it's just a plan for our extension then. We should go ahead.
Or what I told my wife is maybe we should just go on vacation.
Yeah.
I don't deny that the climate is changing. I do push back on the concern that if we don't act today, now, and change our lives drastically, that we will meet the end. I can remember, this was 20 years ago, the phenomenon called peak oil. The same thing was, mm-hmm. we were told we had 10 years left if we continued to use oil at the same rate because the planet was running out of oil, and that we had 10 years. That was 20 years ago. That prediction did not turn out to be true.
Well, I'm old enough to know that in the 70s, we were told that the planet was cooling and we were going into another ice age. So, but that's not what we're talking about today.
Nope.
We're talking about Salem.
Nope.
And we're going to come back. We're going to have to quick break because I want to come back and I want to congratulate something I heard Councilor Lewis say from his seat at a city council meeting. It was brilliant, folks. It was brilliant. Stay tuned. We're gonna thank him for that. You're listening to this Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart, and Dave is off today in our station. Today we have City Councilor Jim Lewis, recently re-elected. Actually, his term just started at the front of this year, so we've got him for about 3.5 more years. We were talking, I promised to compliment you because I thought it was brilliant and not said often enough. So it was a meeting about the bridge before majority of the council voted to kill our bridge. And there was public testimony. You were talking about the people who think that we're all basically headed for extinction unless we dramatically change it. By dramatically, like completely change the world in the next few years. And how the number one killer of the planet was the internal combustion engine vehicle and so forth. And you asked, could you tell me if your testimony tonight would be any different if the cars going across the bridge were electric cars? Crickets, right? It was like, and the citizen that was providing testimony did not have an answer. It was like, didn't anticipate the question, but didn't even have an answer to the question because the question was so perfect and poignant and to the point. We were talking during the break, and Councillor Lewis was saying, I don't think some people have faith in mankind to be able to adapt, to be able to change how we're living and so forth. And yeah, I mean, California's already talking about, you were saying, getting rid of gasoline-powered cars and so forth over a few decades. But it was such a great question, and I want to thank you for asking. You're just saying, hey, you know, what if they're all electric cars that are being fueled by renewable energy resources plus the bicycles and the pedestrians and so forth? Do you still not want a bridge? I mean, people still want to go to their kids' baseball games. People still want to go to the movies. People are still going to want a transportation. They don't want to drive to the airport and so on and so forth. It's like... Yeah. Yeah.
For me, I'll be a little philosophical with you.
Please.
Cars represent movement, the freedom of movement. Historically, if you go back 200 years, those devices that the people used for movement were horses. And they were important enough that if you stole my horse, if you stole my transportation device, you got hung. That is an example of how important the transportation device was then. I think the transportation devices are just as important for people, and especially for their freedom to move around. Mm. I'm someone who's driven across the country a number of times, and I appreciate the ability to be able to move around in my country. And the way I do that is with an automobile. I don't have any issue. In fact, I have faith that as this world transitions, we will see the use of electric cars or solar-powered cars. We're going to even see, in fact, I heard on the news today, there's a city somewhere in the country that is going to allow, I guess you call them vehicles, but they're going to be floating about 20 feet above the ground. Mm. So are we going to be in the Jetson era before we know it?
Wow. Well, they are talking about electric-powered passenger aircraft as well.
When you think about it, the only thing for that type of travel is you have to be able to have something like a drone strong enough to carry a person. Well, they're carrying large bags now, so the idea of a drone strong enough to carry a person is possible. And then the other thing is, of course, when you're up in the sky with no streets or turning lanes, you got to be worried about crashes. Well, anti-crash devices, is going to help with that. So are we going to be there someday? Who knows? Right now, the preferred choice is the automobile, and I just don't see this part of the country abandoning that source of transportation.
Isn't a lot of irony in that? I've read several articles recently about how millennials are buying RVs, are choosing to see the country in that way and
Correct.
Travel in that way, taking the creature comforts, but yep. doing this thing that is not exactly climate-saving kind of recreation, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the city. So you have the public hearing on the budget. You're going to vote on the budget. You got a revenue task force. Your thoughts, we got this from Council Anke. I'm not going to tell you his answer, but okay. Your thoughts on which revenue-increasing measures will move forward and with the likelihood that they'll move forward only with a vote of the people.
The recommendation from the policy committee was, irregardless of what method or methods that are chosen to move forward, they would be sent to the voters for approval. Of the three right now, the only one that's required to go to the voters would be an increase in the gas tax. If we wanted to do an employee tax, the city council apparently has the ability to do that. And as we know, the city council has the ability to add fees such like the street fee, mm-hmm. a street light fee, on a council level without going to the voters. But I think it was wise, and the more I think about it, I think it was very wise for that policy committee to come out with a recommendation that no matter what, we send it to the voters. The one, quite frankly, that interests me that I haven't heard the answer to is if it's possible to have an employee tax where all employees, whether they live in Salem or not, pay the tax, then I think that that is more equitable than some of the others. A gas tax for someone who works in Salem but doesn't work in Salem simply is ineffective. They'll buy their gas where they live. An employee tax, if it could cover, including the state employees, whether they do or don't live in Salem, I think is more fair.
Which one are you most likely to would cast a vote in favor of going through the voters or sending out? You've got a gas tax, you've got a services fee, in effect, right? And you've got a payroll tax that levied upon employees that work in the city of Salem.
I personally believe that hopefully as we go through the process, we'll identify one. If we were to try to do it in multiple options, I'd be more concerned about the success of that. Pick one method to, quite frankly, increase the contributions that citizens give the city to do its business, and if the voters pass, then it happens. But as far
as you sound like you have certainty that it will go to the voters.
I can't be certain because the council has the right to make decisions, and I'm only one of nine members. I will repeat that the task force that looked at these three options unanimously said that it should go, irregardless. The voters should be the ones to say whether we do it or not. And Salem has been very successful about passing bond measures, passing things like this, if there's enough clarity. And quite frankly, if there's something in it for everybody. The Streets and Bridges bond measure that was passed in 2008 was not the best time to float a $100 million bond measure, but yet it passed.
Indeed. All right, so let's wrap up talking about some of the changes having to do with the budget. There's a new CFO position being created, but you were telling me before the show that's really a consolidation of two different roles into one new executive position.
Yeah, the way I see it, we had the city of Salem had a budget officer, Kelly Jacobs, who inch for inch is the most I don't know what the right word would be. She made the city budget look understandable to me, and if anybody can do that, they deserve a prize. She is retiring, leaving, and. Casey Duncan, who was the assistant city manager, left a few months ago. The city manager has decided to not necessarily consolidate those two positions, but eliminate both the assistant city manager and the budget officer and replace with a chief financial officer. And I think especially in the budget situation that we're in, I think that was a wise choice. You know, it'll put more responsibility on the department heads, and it will also have somebody at a high level who is really watching out the finances for the city.
And who's that person going to be? Are we hiring from inside? Hiring from outside?
No, actually,
I think it was recently in the news, right?
The gentleman that was hired is his name is Robert Barron, and his first day was yesterday. And I like this because I'm an East Coast guy. He comes from Connecticut.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly the small town in Connecticut. It's a small town. What people need to realize it is on the East Coast is everything's a small town and they're all connected. So it may be a small town in population, but it is truly a city environment. And so his last experience was on the East Coast, and now he will you will help us here on the West Coast. I've always said we don't need to reimagine solutions. If we can find things that have worked in other places historically, why not copy them?
Indeed. Like, for instance, the Climate Action Plan.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I don't want to joke about it, but I understand Eugene is doing a second one. Maybe we could have their first one.
Yeah, worked for that for a while. Okay. We're going to take our last break and come back and finish up. And actually, I would like to talk to Councillor Jim Lewis here with us on Newsmakers about whether or not the Climate Action Plan as proposed by the city councilors is something for the city to follow in their activities, or is it a plan for them to tell the citizens how to act as we move forward? Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is sponsored by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Dave is off today. In the studio with us is City Councilor Jim Lewis, Ward 8, representing West Salem, or the vast majority of West Salem is in his ward. And we were just talking during the break about how spectacular Salem looks.
Oh, yeah. I'm retired, so I get to kind of control my own schedule, and I've been walking for years now, ever since the Mento Island Bridge opened up. I start in the West Salem parking lot next to the railroad bridge and walk across it into Riverfront Park, walk along the park, and then over the Mento Island Bridge and back. And it's 2.5 miles. My doctor thinks it's great, and it's beautiful. And the last few days, and I got to do a shout out to the Public Works folks. They do an excellent job with minimum resources to make our parks as beautiful as they are. I have family members, I mentioned at the break, family members that live in major cities, San Francisco, Atlanta, the Washington, D.C. area. And when they come to visit, I take them on that walk, and they are in awe how beautiful that setup is. And they're from major cities that have amenities themselves. But they talk very, very kindly about what Salem has and how beautiful it is.
Well, hopefully, Councilor Lewis, we're going to get to a place where they can come visit and fly right into Salem.
Oh.
Right?
That is my, yeah.
That would be so
absolutely
great.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to, it does look spectacular. And in the last decade, especially, there's been so many improvements to Mento Brown Park. It used to be somewhat of a secret, not necessarily a secret, but not as well utilized. And now it's more accessible. There's broader paths. There's more paved paths. There's more signage. It goes on and on. I used to do this like 4+ mile loop and think you might see one or two people because it was just this gem out there that was, some of it was unimproved and you're kind of in the wilderness right here in the middle of Salem. So, but now, darn it, they've done so many great things out there.
More people are there. Yeah. When it first opened, there were times where I walked across the bridge and walking back towards downtown, there was nobody else on the bridge, and it was, the wind was howling and the bridge was moving a little bit, kind of spooky. Never now do I not see somebody walking in the parks.
So let's center it back on West Salem before we run out of time here. Okay. The urban renewal area, of course, urban renewal, we've talked about it in the show. There's a downtown urban renewal area with some things happening right now with major grants and this industrial park area and gateway area. But West Salem has its own. Do you see any major project coming out of that West Salem gateway?
Eventually, absolutely. The West Salem, that the urban renewal area of West Salem is truly one of the city's gems.
Is that Second Street underpass under Wallace part of that?
That could be part of it. That is something that is going to be extremely expensive. We've gotten to the point where it's been designed, it's been visioned. There is, I think, a preference towards an underpassing as opposed to an overpassing. There are still folks in West Salem that would like to see an at-grade crossing, but the Oregon Department of Transportation is adamantly against that. But the Urban Renewal District is being very successful in West Salem, mostly on small projects. We have a couple of neat breweries now in West Salem, so we don't have to go across the river for those. The Edgewater District is being positively benefited by the Urban Renewal area. So we're seeing a high interest in the smaller projects, and you get the sense that the big ones are going to be coming. And
in the Edgewater, or the section that's kind of in the flatter area of West Salem, some of that's industrial, and you have a lot of employment base. Yep. Are there any changes of use or revitalization happening in there that gets urban renewal money?
Yeah, in fact, the city has just changed its code and encouraged what we'll call mixed use. And I can't pronounce the brewery, but I'll say that it is tucked in. Tucked in right in the industrial area. It's a sensitive thing. You have to allow for the convenient continuation of the work that's going on there, but yet you want to bring in services and opportunities such as the breweries to complement. And so it really is evolving into a mixed-use area as opposed to just developing one.
And you have a new use in that area, Northwest Rehab Associates. We had them on, like Mike Deuter's on the show several months ago, talking about that new investment in West Salem, an incredible center for health and fitness and therapy will be.
Even more so, whether it's that or the fire station. Quite frankly, the turn down of the Salem River crossing puts us in a desperate situation. If we lose the crossing that we have now, West Salem needs to be able to be independent. And the medical facilities and the safety facilities are crucial.
So how do you feel about, and we just had this, talking about this in the show yesterday, $100 million to retrofit an already pretty aged bridge?
It's better than having it fall down. and I've learned, quite frankly, over the last 5 years, you can talk as much common sense as you want, but if the money is there to do certain things and it's not there to do other things, it doesn't make sense not to do what the money's being appropriated for. You got to take what you can get and maximize the value of it. The state seems to be animate about putting in fixes to our existing bridges, certainly more animate about that than building new bridges. I would rather have at least one bridge be seismically stable than to have somebody else have that $100 million.
Okay, real quickly, a couple major grants happening downtown, urban renewal area, one for the micro apartments at the old McMahon site, favoring that?
Yeah, anything that brings people and activity to downtown on a private basis, the amount of money that the grants are is so superseded by the tax value on an ongoing basis. People just all they talk about is, well, this person got $750,000. They don't really stop to think about the tax advantage that the city's going to generate year after year after year.
Okay, and hopefully that'll be true once the site for urban for the United Gospel Mission gets redeveloped and goes on the tax rolls.
Correct.
Right. All right, so we're going to have to let you go, but thank you for coming in to Newsmakers. We've been talking to Councilor Jim Lewis, Ward 8, City of Salem. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your service. Hopefully we'll have Dave back tomorrow. So stick with us, folks. This is Brent DeHart for Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.